Morning, everyone. Today's daf and ksuvos is daf yud. We are in Tesamid Beis. We are continuing from the discussion that we started with yesterday. The man makes a claim. Pesach pasuch matzasi. Says we're going to learn later today. I said it yesterday, but we're going to see it very clearly in the Gemara today. It's a bit of a chutzpah. He gets married to a woman, and he feels that she wasn't a basula, but not because of any physical evidence. That's not true. It was because of physical evidence, but not because of dama. Either there was or there wasn't blood, but it has to do with his own sensation and his own and his own perspective. And he says, Pesach pasuch matzasi. I found a resistance, and as a result of that, he makes a claim that she is a ba'ula and not a basula. And what becomes of that claim? So the Gemara goes on to report in the name of Rebbe Elazar. This is where we started the discussion yesterday. The discussion started on the very, very bottom of Ches Amud Beis, last three words, on the top of Tes Amud Aleph. So the man says, Pesach Pesuch Masasi, Neman Lo Osra Alav. So he's Neman, he's believed. And when I say he's believed, as we learned in Rashi yesterday, and this was very clear from the Gemara, not that he has objective credibility. We're not saying as a factual statement that she is a ba'ula, but from his perspective, she's a ba'ula, and therefore, as we learned in yesterday's daf, so she now becomes usher to him based on his quote-unquote his testimony. Now again, what exactly this is? So Rashi uses the term shavi nafshe chaticha di isura. He took something which was permitted to him, meaning his wife, and he made her prohibited to him with that statement that she was a ba'ula. Now the Gemara points out yesterday, just to quickly review, all he's saying is that she's a ba'ula. We don't know when it happened. We don't know if it happened before they got married, or before Kiddushin or after Kiddushin. We don't know if it was bonus or baratza, and this is what's classically known as a sfeiks feika. It's a double doubt. Even if he's right, but that doesn't mean that she's usher to him. So the Gemara constructs two scenarios where we know that she's going to be usher to him. Either number one, Eishes Kohen, where it only makes it one suffix, because by Kohen, it does not matter if it's Onis or Ratzon, she will become usher to him. And so therefore, the only suffix left on the table is before or after Kiddushin. Or the other case the Gemara said yesterday is if he was Mekadosh when she was under the age of three, where there is no distinction between before or after Kiddushin. Everything is after Kiddushin. He was Mekadosh before she turned three. Anything that happens to her before three is not going to affect her. The Basulim are going to grow back. So the only suffix then is Ba'onis Baratzon. So those are two scenarios, said the Gemara yesterday, where, assuming that he's right, which from his perspective he's right, so then she's going to become usher to him. Good. Hedy asked me a question at the end of yesterday's daf. We're going to discuss it right now, and that's the following. So we believe in them, and they're prohibited to one another, and obviously he has to divorce her based on his testimony that she now is not, she wasn't a basula, she was a ba'ula. Is she going to get her ksuva? Okay, that was Eddie's question that he asked me yesterday. We'll see in just a moment. That's where we're starting today's daf. We're on Testament base. We're going to be starting now about halfway down the page. We're starting today with the words Amar Yehuda Amar Shmuel. This is where our starting point is. Just to take a moment to thank the Lubin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is Len Lezechen and Shvaz. Liba Gabriela Bar Shmuel. So you take a look at the Gemara. The Gemara now makes a statement. Amar Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Ha'omer Petzach Pesuch Masasi. If a man says that his wife was a ba'ula based on his own sensation and based that he felt that there was no resistance, Ne'amalav Sida Ksuvaso. So he could be Mafsid Ksuva. He could take away her Ksuva. I'm taking it away, by the way, you understand. It's not taking anything away, meaning he's the one holding the money. But in other words, but her claim to Ksuva now is been revoked because he thought that he married a Basula, wasn't the Basula. From his perspective, it's a Ba'ula, and therefore is a revocation of the money. Now, what the Gemara does not do is the following. If you look at yesterday's daf and you look at where we started today, so it's nearly the identical statement, but with a notable difference. If you look back at yesterday's statement of the Gemara, Ha'omer Pesach Pasuch Matzasi, Neman La'osar Alav. So yesterday's daf, in the name of Rebbe Lazar, says that he's believed, but he's believed Lagabi what? He's believed Lagabi Isser. Okay, doesn't say anything about Ksuva. Now, if you go back to where we were today and we read the same line, it's nearly identical, but with one notable difference. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Homer Pesach Pasuch Matzasi, Neman Lahafsida Ksuvasa. So he can be Mafsi Ksuva. It sounds like from the Gemara that Rav Elazar and Shmuel are arguing with one another. Right? I say Shmuel, it's Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, but it sounds like they're arguing. Meaning, one could make an argument, one can construct an argument that on the Amud Aleph, Rebbe Lazar says that he's believed, but only Lagabi Isser. But he has to give her a get, and he has to give her Ksuva. Whereas, according to Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, he's believed, and not only she asked him, not only is he going to give her a get, but also she's going to forfeit her ksuva based on what he said. Now, the obvious question, which the Gemara is going to deal with in just a moment, is that's a lot of credibility extended to him. Meaning, I understand Shavei Nafshei Chaticha D'Yisuri, he wants to make her asur to him. By all means, he has the right to do so. But to cause her a loss, a financial loss, based on something that he said, he does not have any hard evidence, he does not have witnesses, all he has is his own testimony, and he's going to cause her a loss of money based on his own testimony, the Gemara in a moment is going to ask that question, how could he be extended that much credibility if he doesn't have any witnesses, he doesn't have any hard evidence? Okay, we are going to be discussing that in just a moment. I'm Rav Yosef, my Kamash Wantanina. So Rav Yosef says, I think it's obvious, and I think we already learned this in Mishnah. I don't even think this is a chiddush, says Rav Yosef. Ha'ochel etzachama b'Yehuda, shalom be'edim. The Mishnah, which we're going to see in a couple days from now, it's on Daf Yud Beis. A person eats by his father-in-law in the province of Yehuda. As we've pointed out, we're going to point this out a number of times. In the province of Yehuda, after Kiddushin, so the husband and wife would spend time together, and sometimes alone, and sometimes they would have relations. It's not clear from the Gemara, we're going to see this a number of times in the first parak. It's not clear from the Gemara if those relations are sanctioned, not sanctioned, but kind of like the Chachamim, you know, kind of allowed it. Whatever the case is, in the province of Yehuda, after Kiddushin, the husband and wife would possibly have relations with one another. So, Ha'ochel Eitzochama b'Yehuda, if a person eats by his father-in-law in the province of Yehuda, Shalom be'edim, and there were no witnesses, Eino yachol aton tainus besulim, so he cannot, when they get married, he can't make a claim and say, oh, you know what, I expected my wife to be a besula, and lo and behold, she wasn't a besula. He can't make that claim, and the reason why he can't make that claim is very simple, because he's probably the reason why she's not a besula. Because they were secluded together alone prior to the marriage. So the Gemara, So the Gemara says, now, in the province of Yehuda, he can't make a taina, for the reason we just explained. Baba Galil. So now, all we're going to do is we're going to learn the same Mishnah, but make a very simple diuk. Let's say they weren't in Yehuda. Let's say they were in the Galil. That's the northern section. That's the area where, during Kiddushin, they would not be alone together prior to the marriage. So Matzi Tain. Okay, good. So that means, of course, that in Galil, he can make a Taina. Ulamai. Now, as far as the Taina is concerned, what ramifications is that claim going to have? Ila Osra Lav Yehuda Milo. Now, if we're just talking about Isser, look, you can live in the province of Yehuda, and you can make her Asur to you. Again, the idea of Isser, Shavya Nafshi Chaticha D'Yisura. Even if you live in the province of Yehuda, if the husband wants to make a claim that his wife wasn't a Besula, and he wants to make her Asur to him, so I'm not discussing how prudent that is, but in terms of the halachic efficacy, of course he could do that. He has every right to do that. It must be that the topic of discussion over here is whether or not he can forfeit her ksuva. Can he negate her ability to collect the ksuva? That obviously must be the issue. Where in Yehuda he can't, but that of course means that in the Galil he can. Udekatan taina. And he's forfeiting her ksuva based on the claim. What was the claim? Well, again, the Mishnah doesn't say, but let's speculate. The Gemara says, you know what the claim was? My love to Katayin times Pesach Pesuach. It must be that the claim was that he felt that there was no resistance, and therefore she previously had relations with another man. That was the claim. So if we put all this together, now again, there's a couple of assumptions that we made over here, but if we put all this together, that what the ramifications were was not the Isser, because Isser, he can always make her Isser. The ramifications were Ksuva. And in Yehuda, he cannot make a claim, which means that in the contrasting region of Galil, he can make a claim. And the assumption is that he's making a claim to forfeit a ksuva. And what's the claim? So another assumption, the claim is Pesach Pesuach. If we put all that together, so then we're going to arrive at the conclusion that if he says Pesach Pesuach, he can forfeit a ksuva. So all that Rav Yosef is saying is, look, I know it sounds like a big chiddush, but I think it's the Mishnah. So the Gemara says, lo, dekatayin tanis damim. So the Gemara says, yeah, but we're just going to change one of the assumptions. I mean, maybe all the other assumptions are right, but maybe the Mishnah there is describing what kind of claim is he making? Damim, meaning he brought the bedsheet in, he brought the wipes in, and there was no blood on any of it. And the claim is going to be not based on his own sensation, but on more external evidence, and that is the actual absence of blood on the sheet. Okay, so and if that's true, so then we don't have a proof for the statement of Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Okay, so where do we land? Where are we right now? In the middle of a discussion of when a man makes a claim and there is no external evidence, there's just his perception, so he can make her usher to him. That's clear. And then the only thing left for discussion is, can he also forfeit a ksuva? Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel says yes, he can forfeit a ksuva, and Rabbi Lazar, not clear. I can show you. Tosfos discusses Nema la Sita Ksuvasa. See Tosfos on Testament Beis. It's 1, 2, 3. It's 4 Tosfos and down. Nema la Sita Ksuvasa. Omeri. Deshmu mo deshaper de Nema la Sura la Sita Ksuvasa. So the Tosfos of the opinion, he quotes one of the Balei Tosfos, the Ri, and he says that Shmuel and Rav Elazar are not arguing. They both agree that she is going to forfeit a ksuva. Okay, and Tosfos goes on to say that the bigger statement is the Yisr, which you can argue that point, but Tosfos says no, the bigger statement is the Yisr, but really the naturality, they both agree that his claim can not only create an Yisr, but also allow her to forfeit a ksuva. And then we.
But why is Matana good in Yehuda? Here it says not good in Yehuda. Why not?
Because.
Because there were eight in there, right?
There were no eight. There was no eight in
there.
Huh?
There were.
Ha'ochel etzochama b'Yehuda shelo be'edim.
Yeah, but.
It says the Mishnah.
No, but the Tana's Dumim, he would say they did have people,
No, In other words, when he was by his shver in Yehuda, there was no one who was overseeing it. No one was making sure whether they were alone or they were not alone. So in other words, we simply don't know what happened historically. Then at the Chasna, so they had what could have been Bia Rishona, and the Gemara says, and now he wakes up the next morning and he says, wait a second, she wasn't a Basula.
But Yehuda, because he
had... So in other words, and what is he substantiating that claim with? The question is, what is he substantiating the claim with? Is he substantiating it with Pesach Pasuach? That's what the Gemara thought.
Right.
Then the Gemara says, no, he's substantiating his claim with the actual external evidence of bringing the Betshi.
Right.
Okay.
Again,
for the... Again, for the question of making her prohibited to him, he can make the claim anywhere. That's what the Gemara said. In terms of the issue is whether or not he can actually forfeit her to lose her ksuva, in which the Gemara now is saying is that Yehuda he can't, but
he can't after nesuim, but he should be able to do after kedusha.
Well, it's similar to the same. Right, the ksuva is generally not written by kedushin. The ksuva is generally written by nesuin, generally speaking. Although that's also not absolute, but that's generally the case. Itmar. We're now on the top of Yud Amud Aleph. The Gemara continues. Amar Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel. Mishum Rabbi Shimon Ben Elazar. Rav Nachman says in the name of Shmuel. Now, note by the way. The previous statement was Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel. This is Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel. All I'm pointing out right now is they're both going back to Shmuel, and you'll see that's significant in just a moment. You'll see why. Mishum Rav Shimon Ben Elazar Chachamim Tikna Lahem Levnoisusol LeBesula Masayim LaAmana Mana. The rabbis instituted that the Besula is going to receive a ksuva of 200. When I say 200, by the way, I think this is the first time in the Masechta. We're a week and a half in. I feel like everyone knows this, but we haven't actually said it yet formally, so let's say it right now. The ksuva, as we pointed out time and again, is a settlement payment. Again, the ksuva also means that there are obligations during the marriage as well. But we're just coming from the perspective right now of the cash settlement that occurs at the termination of a marriage. Either upon death or divorce, she will be entitled to receive a settlement. How much that settlement will be? So if she went, she got married, she was a besula. So typically the settlement is 200 zuz. If she was, when she got married, a ba'ula, she previously had relations. So the settlement is going to be, at that point, deemed 100 zuz. Again, all this is written up at the time of the actual marriage itself. This is what we refer to as a ksuva. What the Gemara now is going to be arguing is, where was this instituted? Who instituted the ksuva? And our big question of the day, really the biggest topic of today, is going to be, is the ksuva a document that was imposed by the Torah? Or was it a document that was instituted and mandated by the Chachamim? As we're going to see in just a moment, that's a machlokas. So the Gemara says like this. The Chachamim instituted the ksuva to be for a besula to be 200, for an amana to be 100. V'heim ha'eminuhu. And they, meaning the Chachamim, the same Chachamim, extended credibility to the husband. Where if he makes a claim which has no external evidence, it's just his own perception, his own sensation, if he says Pesach Pasuach, so then he's going to be believed. To which the Gemara says, okay, so in other words, you institute a ksuva for the woman at the same time you're giving that kind of credibility to a man, so what was the point of the ksuva? So Rav explains, because we have a chazaka. We have a general assumption. Halacha works very often with chazaka, with built-in assumptions. And Rava says that's what we have over here. We have a chazaka, we have a general assumption that a man will not go through the trouble of funding and paying for a wedding only then to upend everything, to uproot anything, upset everything by saying that, oh, and the next morning she wasn't a basula, she was a ba'ula. Right? Like the Rambam, if you take a look at the Rambam, when he codifies this halacha, he says basically he's going to turn the simcha happiness is going to go right immediately into sorrow. And a person, generally speaking, will not want to do that. Okay. I'm sorry, just give me one moment. Now, if you take a look at Rashi, the top Rashi in Yud Amud Aleph, so Rashi goes on to explain. What we just learned together is the following. A man is extended credibility by the Chachamim, but it's precipitated by the fact that the Ksuva to begin with is a Din D'Rabbanan. What if Ksuva was Daraisa? Rashi writes, Klomar, Ihavi Ksuva Daraisa. If the Ksuva obligation is a Daraisa, Lo Havi Neman Lahavkia, then we would not have extended credibility to the man. Alak Be'edus Yedua. What is the only thing that would allow her to allow him, the husband, to forfeit her Ksuva? If Ksuva was Daraisa, Edim. Meaning, if Ksuva Daraisa, what does that mean? Ksuva Daraisa means that he's obligated by the Torah to have to pay her the ksuva settlement. So then, a statement that he makes that has no actual evidence, is nothing other than just his own perception and his own sensation of what happened, that would not be able to cause her that kind of loss. The only thing that would be aidim, would be substantial evidence. That's exactly the point of our Gemara. Once your starting point is that ksuva zedin derabanan, heim amru veheim amru. Now the Chachamim say, look, we're instituting ksuva, we're going to extend them credibility. Those two points are connected side by side. Heim shetiknua amru shuhu ne'aman lahafsida. They, the ones who institute the ksuva, are the same people who say that he's extended such a credibility. Af betainas pesach pasuach, even if his whole claim that she wasn't a basula is only based on the fact that he feels that she wasn't a basula. Good. That also means now, according to Rashi, I mean, Rashi says it, I'm not making a diuk in Rashi. That also means that if ksuva were a din daraisa, so then that means that he wouldn't be extended that credibility. Okay. And the statement made over here on the top of our amud of Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel basically fits in perfectly to what we said on the beginning of today's daf with Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, where Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel says he could forfeit the ksuva, and the reason why he has that right and ability is because ksuva to begin with is only a din derabbanan. Okay, let's go on. Tana, the Gemara says we learned in a brisa. Hov eknas chachamim hu lo sigba elam zibaris. Okay, we have a brisa. The brisa refers to the ksuva as a knas chachamim. It's a penalty. Now the Gemara says that language is very difficult. I'm going to come back to that language in just a moment, referring to the ksuva as a knas, as a penalty. It's not a penalty, and the Gemara is going to clarify that point in just a moment. But anyway, just explain the latter half of the statement. Therefore, she can only collect from zibaris. Okay, those who've been in the daf long enough, you'll know that basically properties are graded. The grading of properties go basically in A, B, and C. Okay, that's just my own terminology. That's not the Gemara. Right? The A property is the best property. It's quality property. The B is mid-grade property. And then there's C. Right? I find in life everything goes basically A, B, C. Gasoline. Right? It's like A, B. Right? Most of the grades in life go in that order. So the terminology the Gemara uses for these properties are the best is what's called Iris. with an ayin. The mid-grade property is Beinonis, and the lowest grade property is Ibaris. Now, just as a point of clarification, it never means when we're grading properties that you're going to give a property that's going to be less than the value of that which you owe. You always are going to be paying that which you owe. It's just a question now of whether or not you're going to be giving your property that's on the beach, or are you going to give your property that's in a less right, correct, in the swamp. All right, very good. That's a nice contrast. So but you are obviously you're always going to give the amount of property, the value of the property is going to be that which you owe. But obviously, when you got beachfront property, so it's less property to get to that value, and it's very easy to turn and to flip and to sell, and it's just an easier commodity to maintain as opposed to your property that's right next to the swamp.
But if it's a knas, why is it?
Well, wait just 1 second. The Gemara is going to clarify that point in just a moment. That expression knas is how the Brice is originally presented to us. Right now, I'm just explaining Ziboris. Ziboris over here means that when she collects that, yes, she is owed money at the conclusion of the marriage, but that money which she's going to get, the property that's going to be used to secure that money is only going to be the low-grade property. It's going to be the Ziboris. So Kanasa, my Kanasa. The Gemara immediately objects to the idea that the Ksuva is referred to as a Kanas. So the Gemara clarifies, it's not a Kanas, it's a Takana, it's an institution. But because it's an institution of the Rabbanan, it's because the Chachamim were the ones who levied this obligation against the husband, so the Chachamim kind of made it a little bit easier on him in that he doesn't have to give up his A or B grade property. His C grade property is the only thing that's Meshubah that is going to be mortgage secured against this obligation.
Doesn't answer the question of Kanaz. They just, it doesn't answer the word. Why they use the word Kanaz?
I understand. And basically, it's the Gemara objects to Kanaz. It doesn't answer. In other words, it's an objection. Don't call it Kanaz. But I do understand, however, that the original presentation of the Brisa, the reason why it's called the Kanaz is because
From her point of view,
she's getting the worst. And as you know, right, the fifth parak of Gittin, which we'll get to soon enough. Fifth parak of Gittin says that whenever you have an obligation outstanding against somebody, you pay with Beinonis. Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's a kness. Yeah.
So from that standpoint, you're right. From that standpoint, I understand this is an obligation. It should be no different than any other obligation. And here I'm getting Ziboris. Why am I getting Ziboris? The Brisa describes it as a knas. It's not objectively a knas, but from her standpoint, she's getting less than what she normally is entitled to get. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Amar Ksuva Isha Min HaTorah. And here we have the other side of this machlokus. The Gemara quotes in the name of Shimon ben Gamliel that the Ksuva is not a din derabanan, it's actually a din deraisa. Umi Amar Shimon Gamliel Hachi. The Gemara says, really? Is that his position? Vatanya. Gemara quotes the Brisa. Kesiv Ishkol Kamora Besuulos. The Gemara here quotes two psukim, one from this week's Parsha, Parsha's Mishpatim, and one from Parsha's Kiseitse. In this week's Parsha, the Torah describes Mefata, and the Parsha's Kiseitse, the Torah. That's the Gemara. The Torah describes Ones. Okay, there are two times in the Torah where the Torah describes an inappropriate relationship that occurs. It's more than inappropriate, but in our parsha, Mefata, man seduces a woman to have relations. They weren't married, but he's Mefata, he seduces her. And in Parsha's Kiseitse, it's Ones, a man rapes a woman. In both of those, so there is a penalty for the man. The man, we're going to be spending the third parak of our Masechta talking about this in detail. But the penalty for the man, who either is Mefata or Ma'anis, a woman, is that he has to pay her a knas, he has to pay her a penalty. And here we're going to use the word appropriately. It's a knas, it's a penalty. Aside from all the bodily damage that was incurred by the woman, meaning that this is just like any other bodily damage, any other tort where he harmed her, so he's got to pay for that as well, aside from the knas. And then also there's marriage. He has to marry her with her consent. We're going to be talking about that in the third parak of the Masechta. So this is all in both the case of Mefata and Ones. The Gemara notes that the psukim that are used in both circumstances are very, very similar to one another, and we learn halachas from one to the other. The Gemara over here quotes Va'atanya. This is a brisa. Kesiv yishkol kamara besul sheizeh kamara besulos umara besulos kezeh. You pay her kim mohar, mohar mem vav hei resh. That's the word that's used in the Torah. It's referring to some sort of other settlement. What other settlement is it talking about? Oh, besula, meaning the ksuba document that's normally given to the woman. She is a kamar besul samar besul kazeh. Mikan samchu chachamim ksuba isha min haTorah. From here, the chachamim relied on the idea that the ksuba isha is min haTorah. I know it's a strange language, right? The chachamim relied from here that the ksuba isha is min haTorah. Aside from it being pretty obvious, meaning what do the chachamim have to inject into the pasuk if the pasuk is speaking about the ksuvas isha? Either way, the brisa, the tanakam of this brisa, clearly is of the opinion that the ksuvas isha is min haTorah. Shimon Gamliel amar ksuvas isha ena medivrei Torah ela medivrei sofrim, and Shimon Gamliel is quoted over here saying no, that the ksuvas is not midaraisa, it's midarabanan. Okay, now what does he do with the word moar? We'll come back to that at a later point in time, not today. But in the meantime, however, what do you see from this brisa that according to Shimon Gamliel, ksuva is not minator, it's midrabanan. That's what's called a blain stira. The Gemara says epoch. Gemara says that's a blain stira. What are we going to do? It's not an elegant answer, but it's an answer. The Gemara says we're going to have to take the most recent brisa and flip it around, so that Rishon and Gamliel is of the opinion that Ksuvas min haTorah. Umay chazus dafak the basraisa epoch kamaisa. The Gemara says, yeah, but look, as long as you're flipping brises around, why don't you flip the previous brise around so that the second brise remains intact? Rishon and Gamliel holds that Ksuvas de rabbanan, and the previous brise will go like the chachamim. So hashamina leila Rishon and Gamliel damer Ksuvas isha midaraisa none. So the Gemara says we know that according to Rishon and Gamliel, Ksuvas isha is min haTorah. We know it from elsewhere. Gemara quotes the Mishnah. This Mishnah we're going to see in a short 100 days from now.
Why is it anytime a contradiction comes up, they don't just nullify and void the raisa in April?
Sometimes the reaction is poke tunnel of ra, meaning just get the raisa out of here. Sometimes, again, if we were there, I think we'd have a much better understanding of which raisas you have to. You know, we're just going to massage a little bit, and some braces they're just going to extract from the base medrash. So Dinan, the Gemara quotes a Mishnah Shimon Gamliel Omer no stein lami maus kaputkia. So Shimon Gamliel says, what kind of money do you give her? You give her kaputkia money. To us right now, that means nothing. But as I'm about to explain in just a moment, that means that Rav Shimon Gamliel holds that ksuvas d'oraisa. So I'll explain that Mishnah in just a moment. So once we know that. And again, I'll explain why in just a second. Once we know that, so then our hands are tied. We now know that according to Rishon Gamliel, Ksuvas d'oraisa. Once we know Ksuvas d'oraisa, so now that we're going to be massaging one of these braisas, we're going to be massaging the second braisa, where we're going to take Rishon Gamliel and we're going to flip him to the position that the Ksuva is d'oraisa. And I'm going to come back to Kaputkia. Just let me just go through the thread of the Gemara. And then I'll come back. Or the Gemara says, instead of flipping around the braisa, what we could also do is we can massage it another way, and that is by saying that it's one flowing thought, or the entire braisa belongs to Rishon Gamliel. Mikan samchu chachamim ksuvas isha min haTorah, ksuvas amana einu midivrei Torah el midivrei sofrim. Oh, what the braisa means is as follows. If it's a besula getting married, so she gets a ksuva, and that's not something that was instituted by the chachamim, that the Torah is the one who empowers her with the ksuva. And then if it's an amana, a woman who was already married, and this for her is now going to be a second marriage, this ksuva, the Torah doesn't afford her a ksuva, but the chachamim instituted a ksuva. Sheram and Gamliel omer ksuva samana ina medivrei Torah ela medivrei sofrim, because Rav Shimon Gamliel is of the opinion that for the amana, the ksuva is not midaraisa, it's midarabanan. Perfect. Now that we added all that into the braisa, so then the braisa coordinates with what we know. We know that Rishon Gamliel holds that ksuva is min haTorah. What about the braisa? The braisa is talking about ksuva of an almana. That's midrabanan, not min haTorah. Okay, period. Just a couple things we'll talk about before we go on in the Gemara. Number one, Mos Kaputkia, what is that talking about? What was that Mishnah, which we're going to see 100 days from now? So that Mishnah is describing the following. A man marries a woman in Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, in the time of the Mishnayos, so the currency that was used in Eretz Yisrael was lighter. Now for us, I understand this kind of currency talk doesn't mean anything to us. Right? We live in a world where currency is paper, and now currency is not even paper nowadays. Currency is a press of a button. Or a swipe of a card. But back in the good old days, so currency was basically coins. Coins was currency. And there was good currency and there was bad currency. I understand, you go to different countries, you'll also find that, you know, you compare your currency to other countries' currencies, there's also good and bad currency. But in the time of the Mishnah, time of the Gemara, meaning for most of world history, currency was the metal content contained in a coin. Some coins were excellent currencies because they were just heavier coins and made up of a better metal, and some currencies were of an inferior quality. What we're going to learn 100 days from now on Kuf Yud is that in Eretz Yisrael, the currencies were lighter and not as good. In Kaputkia, which I think is modern Turkey, but okay.
Kappadocia.
Okay. No. You traveled the world. You know these things. You know, I just one second. In Kaputkia, so the currency that was used over there was much heavier and a better currency. The Mishnah describes what happens when you marry her here in Eretz Yisrael, and then you guys moved out to Kaputkia, and the marriage didn't work out, and you're divorced in Kaputkia. So which currency do you have to pay her? Can you pay her the lighter Eretz Yisrael currency, the weaker currency, or do you have to pay her with the heavier currency? Rav Shimon Gamliel is of the opinion you always, regardless of, you started here and you moved to Kaputkia. You started in Kaputkia, you moved here. Shimon Gamliel says, you're always going to have to pair with Mos Kaputkia. Why? Because the Ksuva is the Araisa, the Shibud, the lien that the Ksuva creates is a Din de Araisa, and so therefore it's backed by, not the weaker currency, it's going to be backed by the heavier currency. The better currency. And so therefore, Shimon Gamliel says, you're always going to have to pay Mos Kaputkia. So that's just an explanation of that Mishnah, and that's how we know that according to Shimon Gamliel, the Ksuva is Dar Raisa.
Why did you say pay the equivalent?
Again, the value is always going to be the value. It's just a question of what currency you're going to use in order to get to that value.
Some people don't take the best currency.
Yes, yeah, David.
Who does all these appraisals?
Yeah, who grades it? We're going to learn in Gittin, which is, you know, a short year from now. So we're going to learn in Gittin that there's a discussion of whether these appraisals are objective or subjective. There is an appraisal system. We learned this back in Erechin in terms of gauging how much the property is worth. But in terms of the grade of the property, whether it's A, B, or C, so we're going to learn in Gittin that it is a discussion of whether it's objective or it's subjective. Right? Let's say my best property is only as good as your mid-grade property. Is that something to take into consideration? We're going to learn together in the fifth paragraph of Gittin. That's an open-ended discussion, but we'll discuss it then. Okay. The other thing, as long as we're here and we're discussing now, we hit really one of the fundamental topics of a Masechta, and that is whether or not the Ksuva is a Din D'Oraisa or it's a Din D'Rabbanan. So what do we see in our Gemara? It's a Machlokas between the Tanayim. Rav Shimon Gamliel is of the opinion that Ksuva is D'Oraisa. A host of other Talmidei Chachamim, I would assume Tanayim, and also as we learned the beginning of today's daf, Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel is of the opinion that Ksuva is the Rabbanan. Where do we stand on that issue? So that's totally unclear. If you take a look at the top Tosus on Yud Aman Aleph, so he discusses Mashma de Ksuva de Rabbanan. It sounds like from our Gemara that Ksuva is the Rabbanan. Why? Tosus says, because think about where we concluded halachically today. If a man says, Pesach Pesuch Matzasi, he can forfeit her Ksuva. If Ksuva is a Din D'Oraisa, without Edim, you can forfeit her Ksuva? So our Gemara concluded today, yes, you can. So what does that tell you? So Tosfos says, it tells you that Ksuva is the Rabbanan. That seems to be the conclusion. V'chein ba'isha rabba, gabi ein la Ksuva kamar, my time at tekilin la'rabbanan Ksuva, so shalai te'kala ba'ein av la'hotziyah. Amastama da'ashas, sabr de Ksuva de Rabbanan. A Gemara that we did recently in Yavama sounds like the only reason why the rabbis instituted Ksuva is so that he thinks twice and maybe even a third time before he divorces her. So because he's got to think about the settlement that he's got to pay her in the event of divorce. Sounds like that it was a rabbinic institution. The Kasha. Listen to Tosus's question. Fascinating. Tosus is bothered. Why? Because of the Nusach of the Ksuva. Meaning, right, anyone who gets married, so you know that you got to write her a Ksuva. That's what we're going to be learning about for the next about 100 days. So a little bit longer. So anyway, so you have to write a Ksuva. And what's the Nusach of the Ksuva? V'kasha denahogu lichtov b'Ksuva This is the minug of what we write in the Ksuva. Kesev Zuze Masan, 200 zuz, which by the way is equivalent to 50 shkalim, 200 zuz, dechazu laichim ed araisa. And this is the actual text of the Ksuva. You know, I'm going to obligate myself to have to pay you 200 zuz, which the Torah instructed me to do. That's the text of the Ksuva. So now, Tosus is bothered because it sounds like from the text that the Ksuva is Daraisa, not Darabanan. So, the Omer Rabbi Notam, the Samchin, the Roshim Gamliel, the Masitzim, the Perik Basra, the Maisilanami, the Samach, the Amar Nosilami, Maskaputkia, the Ksuva Daraisa. So, the Kamalan Kirushim Gamliel, the Mishnah Seinu. So, Rabbi Notam says, okay, so I have the Nusach of the Ksuva, plus, as we just learned together, the opinion of Roshim Gamliel expressed on Daf Kuf Yud, which we just went over in the Gemara. So Rabbi Natan says, therefore, I'm going to conclude that Ksuva is Daraisa, not Darabanan. Okay, it's interesting. In other words, it's a classic horse and cart discussion. Meaning, you look at the Nusach of the Ksuva, what do you see? It says that you're obligated in a Torah. Oh, must be that Ksuva is Daraisa. Okay, on the other hand, what you could have done is, you could have gone over Agamar, you could have concluded that Ksuva is Darabanan, and so what do you do with the Nusach of the Ksuva? You change the Nusach of the Ksuva. Right, which is what you do. Meaning, and it's not just you. It's the Rishonim, the Sephardic Rishonim. They said that Ksuva is Darabanan. Ksuva is Darabanan. So what we're going to do is we're just going to edit the language of the Ksuva. The Ksuva is a contract. It's a document. I understood that it goes way back, but it's, you know, all, when all said and done, it's a contract. So you take out a pen and you rewrite the contract.
That pasuk that they cited, that makes it seem like it's all right, or no?
The pasuk that they cited was talking about onis and mefata. And the word moar over there just simply means that there's a settlement. In the case of onis, in the case of mefata, there's a settlement. That doesn't necessarily mean that every marriage has a built-in settlement.
No, but it was as the settlement of a...
Right, kim moar abisulos. Right, right. It does agreed. It does sound like there's something there. Okay, and then, you know, the deeper analysis is going to be that maybe the position is that it's somewhere in the middle, meaning that maybe there's a concept of Ksuva Daraisa and the actual monetary amount is deemed by the Chachamim, meaning Tosos doesn't suggest that. But again, you know, elu ve'elu, meaning that maybe the truth is somewhere in the middle.
Why does the example of the currency make it look like Daraisa? Because the currency could argue that they were trying to strengthen the rabbinic position, and they're saying it should be a
correct.
Better currency.
Agreed. If you take a look at Rashi, I mean, Rashi, when he explains that Mishnah regarding Maus Kaputkia, take a look at the end of that Rashi. He says that Ishibu Daraisa, right, you see the end of the Rashi? That's not my Maus Kaputkia, Shinishtabe Bam Kishar Malva to Kasavik Suva Daraisa. Daraisa, meaning that would be like any other Daraisa obligation where the Sheba that's created is a strong Sheba. Okay. Good. Look at the time. All right, we are back in the Gemara now. We are in the middle of Yud Amud Aleph. Let's go. After having now, that really was the big topic of today's discussion, whether Ksuva is Daraisa, whether it's the Rabbanan, it's a Machlokas Tanaim. You already saw in Tosfos, it's a Machlokas Rishonim, whether Ksuva is Daraisa or the Rabbanan. And in terms of Nafkamin, the practical difference, so the best example I could have given is the one that the Gemara gives on the top, where if the husband says that I feel that the wife was not a besula but a ba'ula, and he has no edim, he has no witnesses, he has no external evidence, based on what he says, can he forfeit her ksuva? Our Gemara says yes. Certainly sounds like, I mean, again, I'm just reiterating Tosus's point. It certainly sounds like that the obligation is only midarabana, not midaraisa. Let's continue in the Gemara. We are in the middle of the Amud. Hahu, the asal kami de Rav Nachman. Somebody goes in front of Rav Nachman, Amalei Pesach Batsuch Masasi. So he says to Rav Nachman, the day after the marriage, presumably, my wife wasn't the Basula. So Amalei Rav Nachman Asbu Kufrei. So Rav Nachman says, okay, so start hitting him. In other words, he says to the bailiff, to the clerks, you know, just take him outside and start hitting him. And by the way, not only hit him, but hit him with palm branches. And just if you take a look at Rashi, Rashi says, very good, Rashi says that these palm branches have thorns in them. So in other words, Rav Nachman, it's pretty clear. I don't have to belabor the point. He was very unhappy with this individual, and he beat him with thorn palm branches. And he goes on to explain, mi birchas chavitalei. Look at this guy, he's so knowledgeable on whether a woman is a virgin or not a virgin. In other words, he must have had past experience. Now, it's not perfectly clear in the Gemara is that he was making this as a rhetorical statement, or he was actually making an accusation. Okay, and if you see Tosus himself is not totally clear about that point. But in other words, it's like I said yesterday, it's a chutzpah. It's a chutzpah to make such a claim. So the Gemara says, "V'arav Nachman u'damar mehemen." So the Gemara says, "But wait one second. Go to the top of today's Amud." Rav Nachman says he's extended credibility. So how can you put those two Rav Nachmans together? He's extended credibility, and we're going to go beat him. So the Gemara says, "Umas binan lei kufre." So I'm sorry. "V'har Rav Nachman u'damar mehemen." So the Gemara's response is, the first response is mehemen. Umas binan lei kufre. So the Gemara, first, his initial approach is correct. That's absolutely correct. Meaning, he is extended credibility, he is believed, but at the same time,
how did he know?
How did you know that information? Right. So in other words, yes and yes. That's the first answer of the Gemara. Second answer, Gemara Rav Acha, Mishanei Kam BeBachur Kan BeNasui. Another answer of the Gemara is no. If he's a bachor, he's never been married before, and he has no past experience. So then you give him lashes, and you don't extend him that credibility. Meaning he just simply does not have enough experience of life to know whether or not she was a basulas. You don't believe him. On the other hand, if he was nasui, if he was previously married, so then he is extended that credibility. He does know, and therefore he can. He is not given lashes, and he's extended credibility. So, a person goes to Rabbi Gamliel, and he makes the claim that his wife was not a basula, based on his own experience. So, Amalei Shemahitisa. So, Rabbi Gamliel says, you know, could be that you went in at an angle. And maybe that's why you didn't find the resistance. Gamliel says, I'll give you an analogy. Let's say a person's going in at night back into his home. And it's really dark. And hita umatza pesach lo hita batza na'ul. Now the door's a little bit open, but not very open. If you go in at a particular angle, so you're going to go right into the house, and you're not going to meet any resistance. If, however, you go straight in, so then the door's not totally open. You're going to hit the door, and you're going to hit some resistance. So Rabbi Gamliel says it's possible that she was a bestula, but you just simply didn't go in the right angle. So the Abra, and another way the Gemara tells over the stories, Rabbi Gamliel says maybe you just didn't know any better. Maybe you went straight in, and maybe it's you broke down the door. So person goes in at night and it's really dark, and hita bemezid matzah pasuach. And sometimes you just go in with too much force, and you don't even realize that you broke down the door. So lohita bemezid matzah na'ul. However, if you go in somewhat more delicately, so then you're going to realize that there was some resistance. So again, Rabbi Gamliel says, I'm challenging whether or not, I know you say you think you experienced it a certain way, but Rabbi Gamliel explains to him, but maybe not. Maybe your sensation does not reveal what the actual truth was. Another incident where someone goes in front of Rabbi Gamliel, son of Rabbi. Amalei Rabbi be'altiv lamatzasi dam. So he says that he had first relations with his wife, but there was no blood. Amalo Rabbi Basula Ayisa. And she says, look, I don't know how else to explain this, but I'm telling you I was a Basula. Amalei Mavir Liosa Sudar. So Rabbi Gamliel says, okay, let's see the evidence. So bring in the bed sheet. Avi Lo Sudar Vishar Bemayim. Vikivsu Matzalav Kamiti Bedamim. So he put some water over the bed sheet and exposed a couple drops of blood. Amalo Lech Zacha Bemechecha. So Rabbi Gamliel says to the man, good, she was a basula. Enjoy the rest of your life. So he says, what a great move. Can we do the same thing? So he says to him, no, we cannot do the same thing. We're on the top of Yud Amud Beis. Our geyut, meaning we have a different process in terms of the laundering of how we launder our clothing. It's what's called giyutz. Giyutz, if you take a look at Rashi, it's some sort of irony, right? Even as a chuchis, using a some sort of glass weight. It's some form of irony, and our geyutz is like their kivas, meaning. I don't fully understand this. We learned this together in Masechet Tanis regarding that which you cannot do during the month of Av. You can't launder. You can't do giyutz. All the little that I understand is that It's the Babylonian form of laundering. It's giyutz, and our giyutz is like their kivus. So the iamar ne'aved giyutz ma'avdalei chumrasa. And the Gemara says, okay, so fine. So let's not launder the bed sheet, but let's do giyutz. If our giyutz is similar to their laundering, so let's just do giyutz. The Gemara says it's not going to work. It's just simply going to remove it in its entirety. So we don't have a method of quote unquote uncovering the blood like Rabbi Gamliel had in Eretz Yisrael. Another story. So again, he makes a claim that he had relations with his wife, but there was no blood. So Amale Rebbe Adain Basulani, and again, her claim is that she's still a Basula. Amale Mevili Shtei Shvachos Achas Basula Vachas Beula. So what does he do? So he brings in two maidservants. One was a Basula, one was not. Heviulav Oshivan Api Chavishal Yayin. He set them both on a barrel of wine. Beula Rechanode Basula in Rechanodev. And the Beula, so her breath smelled of the wine, and the Basula did not smell of wine. Avzu. So once he empirically tested that this in fact worked. Avzu Oshiva Velo Haya Rechanodev. So he gave her the I'll use the term breathalyzer. So after validating that this in fact was an effective test, he then tried it on this woman. Her breath did not smell of wine, so she was a basula. So the Gemara says, now it's funny, he could have done all this without the shvachos. What did he need the shvachos for? So the Gemara says, Gemara have a shmirle. He says he heard of such a tradition, but there was no empirical. He never had any empirical experience. So what did he do? Look, I heard about this, but I never experienced this. I don't know if it actually works. So he tested. Right? I'm going to state the obvious. Right? This barrel test in our day and age probably won't work. But just going back, again, give me a moment. Just going back to the time of the Gemara, it did work. Okay, but what was interesting, however, is that he wouldn't do it until he himself empirically saw that it worked. Okay, so he did have some form of a scientific methodology about him, even though to us it seems strange, but he tested it out.
But the bride that he tested had already had a relationship with the husband, so how could he still do it?
She claims she was still a basula.
Right, Phil says, and I didn't present it clearly. She's saying that she's still a virgin.
How could she make that claim if the guy claimed that he had a relationship?
I understand.
The groom said he had a relationship, but then he didn't find out.
I don't want to get, this gets a little bit indelicate.
But
in other words, he thought they had relations. He thought, and okay. She's saying he doesn't know what he's talking about. Okay, v'lava orichar lezazula b'mnos Yisrael. So the Gemara says, so what he did is he just wanted to validate whether or not this test worked or not, and he used shvachos. He didn't want to use benos yisrael in order to validate the test. Moving on, someone went in front of Rabbi Gamliel the elder. Amar lo Rebbe be'altiv lo matzasi dam, and again he makes a claim that there was no blood. Amar lo Rebbe mimishbachas durkatiani sheilam lo dam nidav lo dam besulim. So she explains, look, I guess they should have gone over this before the wedding, but okay, that's not a small point. That's a pretty important point that she did not, she's only revealing this now, or maybe she did and she's just explaining to Rebbe Gamliel, either way. But she says, I'm from the family of Durkati. There's no dam nida, there's no dam besulim. Badek Rabbi Gamliel bekrovasel masa kedvareha. Rabbi Gamliel did just a little bit of investigation. Turns out she's right. So amar lo leif zechach bemekrecha ashrecha. The Rabbi Gamliel says to the husband, you should be happy. Shezachilu mishpacha Durkati. You're happy you married into such a family. What a family. So my Durkati, Dur Katua. Now it's called Durkati because it's Dur Katua, it's cut off. Meaning that this family has the difficulty creating progeny. So I'm Rabbi Chanina Tanchum Mishal Havanichum Rabbi Gamliel La Osarish. The Gemara says, if that's true, so Rabbi Gamliel says, you should be so fortunate. The Gemara points out, it's not the best necham, it's not the best words of comfort. Just like yeast is good for the dough to rise, so too blood is good for a woman. In other words, a woman who has a regular menstrual cycle, so she's going to ovulate, she's going to give birth. In other words, she's going to have a much better chance of having children. See, a woman who has a regular menstrual flow, so she will have a lot of children. So just in terms of a clarification, what he said or what he meant was, look, this is Zachei b'mechecha amarle. He said, you should be happy with what you got. Rav Yosef Ravin amar nischayev b'mechecha amarle. Or the other way to say it is, this is what you got. Meaning... This is what you got. Bishlam laman damin is chayev hainu de Rabbi Chanina. The Gemara says, I certainly understand that if what Rabbi Gamliel ended the story with is, this is what you got. Okay. Alaman damin zachei mai zechusa. So the Gemara says, but why is it a zechus? The law asi lidei safik nida. The Gemara says, no, there is a silver lining. The silver lining is that you'll never have a question of whether or not she is or she isn't nida. She bleeds so infrequently, you'll rarely encounter a suffix. Ha'udas l'kama de Rebbe, amar le Rebbe, ba'altiv l'matzasi dam. We're going to do one more story. We'll end today with the Mishnah. So he says to Rebbe, I didn't find any blood. Amar le Rebbe, adayin besula Isa. And again, she claims that she stole besula. V'shnei b'tzara tzaval. Now, it happens to have been that there was years of famine, so both of them were starving, literally. So Rebbe shepneim shcharim. Rebbe saw that their faces were blackened because of the lack of food. So what did he do? So he bathed them, he fed them, he gave them the drink, he revived them. So Baal Masadam. And then he had beer with her, and then there was blood. So, good. So he solved the problem. So, Kari Rebbe Aleim, Safad Oram Al Atzmam Yavesh Hayaka Eitz. Right? They, prior to him feeding and giving them to drink, they were literally bone dry, and that's why there was no blood. But once he bathed them and fed them, so then everything came back to life. Okay, I'll stop over here at the Mishnah. Tomorrow we pick it up with the new Mishnah, discuss the actual amounts of the Ksuva, which I know we touched on today, but that's coming up tomorrow. And Ger Katan, big discussion tomorrow in Ger Katan. Classic, another classic daf coming up tomorrow. I know this is the first break of Ksuvos. I say that pretty often.